you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff about that. There's so much that is passed down to their own techniques. And then so much of the history we have is because
there we go.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you are with us. By the way, it's sweltering here in Youngstown, where I just was I think a high of 75 and sunny. It was perfect weather. And I came home and I was like,
in Ohio, we get 32 days of sunlight usually, and we use them all up in the months of May and June.
So
the rest
it.
Of the year, it's gloomy. Pitch black.
Yeah. Take your vitamin D supplement.
That's it.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, I was just away at a pastor's retreat in New York. It was very, it was a lot of fun. But we were with some pretty high caliber leaders and had the opportunity to meet Joel Osteen, who a lot of people know as a celebrity pastor of 50,000 people in his church kind of deal. Incredible. He bought the old Houston Rockets Stadium and that's his church. So, does things small.
Yeah.
And, but it was super nice. Sometimes you meet your celebrities, kind of people that you see on social media or whatever. And you're like, oh, that wasn't as good as that. I wish I hadn't met them. He was super genuine, nice, took time out for, us and, got to spend a chunk of time with him. It was good. What I want to talk about today, and one of the things that I noticed and one of the things I think I'm learning, and I want to hear Joe's thoughts on this
because okay.
it's antithetical to Doug's wiring. So my wiring is we had this conversation the last time we were on and we were back and forth. And I think I might have moved
really
Joe's side here a little bit.
No way.
So where
I think I moved a little bit in your direction.
And I still think there's a balance to it. But one of the things that I noticed being around a whole bunch of just high caliber leaders and when I say high caliber, it's not that these are people that are moving millions of dollars, millions of followers. They're thinking in terms of whole demographic shifting, not just and not that there's anything wrong with small towns or small communities or small churches. That's not my point. I felt like I was playing, when you play Madden on rookie and you're like, oh, this is great. I'm amazing. I can score touchdowns. And then all of a sudden you play on pro or all-star and you get smoked. I was just like, these guys are just playing at a different level. This is 4D chess.
Exactly.
And, as I did a lot of listening, I just stood and went, that's how that happens, a number of those things. And it was very neat to watch some of these power brokers and people that are connected. And one of the things that I noticed, so I've been to plenty of pastor's retreats and I've gone and spent 3 days and you meet and you mingle and you have some food and you go to sessions and you learn a few things and you enjoy. And I'm sure that's true for business people who go to, an entree leadership with Dave Ramsey or whatever. Like you go, you grab a bite to eat. These guys never stop. Like every conversation, they are building something. They are fundraising. They are like their brains are always going towards how am I producing in this? There's never a casual, hey, you want to hang out? Like we should get together and have some chicken wings and hang out. Every meal we met with somebody who potentially we were going to do some sort of project or business with. They were on fire all the time. Now, when we went back to the room or we went to the pool, there were certain spaces where they withdrew and had some spots. But when they were in that room and we were together, or whether it was a dessert bar at 9 o'clock at night, whether it was we're going to hang out and have a clam bake next to the ocean, whatever it was, you weren't having a clam bake next to the ocean. You were having a network meeting because there's five people there that we need them on board for this event. That's and we need to do this. And it was, I literally was like, that's how this happens. And it made me rethink because part of me feels like, so if I'm being honest, you watch that and you watch the jockeying a little bit and how that works. And part of me is like, man, everything's about getting something done to some extent. And I appreciate that from, and I'll use a spiritual term here that's used in the Bible. I appreciate the longing for fruitfulness. Like, hey, if we're going to do this, let's have as much fruit as possible. Let's get a harvest that's worth having. But then it's almost like, you know, the human side of Doug here is like, all right, well, at what level do I just care about the person and just enjoy the moment and being there? Because my, on the DISC assessment, I'm a high I, so I value that and I enjoy that space where I'm just like, I don't need anything from you. You don't need anything from me. Let's just be in this moment. And I get that there are spaces where, hey, we're working and we're networking, but I just, you know, it was powerful to watch them go into these rooms, work the room, and all right, now we have this person on board for this and we have this in place and we accomplished these five things. So now that event is going to produce exponential right. more fruit. And I was like, wow, they are not here for relaxation. Right. As much as, yes, it was a great place to relax. They were here to get stuff done.
Right.
And I know you and I talked about this a little bit in terms of, you know, building relationships. Where do you spend time? How do you view those things? And I felt like watching them, I went, I get what Joe's saying with the spreadsheets and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's not that you devalue the relationship. It's just I value the harvest and I know that's a spiritual term, but I value the output of what I can bring to the world and do some good with. And if I spend 45 minutes, and yes, I'm still going to eat lunch, but I'm going to eat lunch in an intentional way
right.
so that when it's time for me to launch a studio, I have this guy and this guy on board. When it comes time for me to launch a business, this guy and this guy are ready, or this gal happen to be all guys that we were with. But in that sense, you know, you're constantly getting information and phone numbers and, oh, we should connect on this. And I work on this project. Would you want to join in? And I was just like, I've never been in a retreat setting like this. Most of the retreat settings, most of the pastors are very high eye. So they like the, how are the kids? How's the wife? How's all that stuff? And there was that, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, they didn't just like come out of the gate, like business, 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 but those sort of things were, are the main course at most of the pastoral retreats I've been to and leadership things. It's all been very social, and this was very business. And I was like, after our conversation last week, where we were talking about the value of relationships and some of that stuff, it made me go, you know, maybe Joe's right with some of this stuff. Like, maybe there is something to this. Like, yeah, you certainly need relationships and you need to be there for people. And yeah, when you bet on people, you always win. That's true. But if your goal is to build something significant, to do something to better humanity, all that sort of stuff, like, time is valuable. And yeah, so that for me was probably the lesson of the retreat, was watching high caliber leaders understand that, hey, time's not infinite. I have this many years to accomplish this, and so I need to make this breakfast count because I'm moving that ball forward.
For sure. And so it's the frame of reference changes a little bit. It's always going to be the same nouns and verbs. You're always going to mm-hmm. be doing the accomplish. You're connecting with people on a common goal. But the deal is your frame of reference is changing because there's going to be some dependencies on your output. So you went from, you know, the social in the village guy
right.
to the hunter. Like, there, you go out and you are successful. You're not thinking of the kill, right? You're thinking of the people who are dependent on you to make that kill. Mm. So there's some purpose to what you have to do. That's from good. This point. So you have to do hard things and you only have so much time, and you know how you need the density of the object that you're going after to be fulfilling because you only have so much time. You know, I think of parachute packers and those hunters. Those mm-hmm. are my two favorite examples, because like, you can go and have a conversation about the Mets game yesterday.
Right.
And then I'm going to interview and say, what value did you get out of that? Well, previous Doug would say, well, I had a interpersonal connection.
I had a great time. Food right. was great. I got to hear about so-and-so.
And I'm going to tell you that it's going to take you 2 years for something to develop that's going to feed your village, and they're all going to die by the time. You're going to feel great about it, but there's going to be death on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to tell me about the good feelings, and I'm going to tell you that you didn't come through on your dependency responsibilities.
Mm. And so you're saying that the to flip and continue with that analogy, that the Mets game is a success. If I walk away from that and I go, well, I made these three contacts and this one's going to help me do this. And we're going to
know
do
where
that.
They're all headed. And it's not this arbitrary, some good things may be in there. It's like, hey, I meet people for the specific purpose of increasing everybody's fruit across the board. How can I help you? How can you help me? And that's why when I sit down and I can't find a way to offer value, I'm out because I'm not going to waste your time sitting around at another meeting.
Interesting. And so how does that, and this is where the human Doug wrestles on this. How does that for you, and we've talked about this before, but it was so like the lesson that I learned at this retreat. How does that not feel like everything is contractual? It's all quid pro quo. Like, hey, you know, if you can help me out with this event, I can help you. Like,
here's some stingy information.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. A players need to be in the room with other A players, because if you know the game that's being played, you don't get your feelings hurt. You're cognizant of other people's time. You get in with some B and C players, and now you all of a sudden feel like everything's transactional because you're playing two different games, so that you could go into a B and C and get everything you want. And all you're going to do is use somebody as traction to get what you want. That's where it comes into icky feelings. A players is what you were in the room with, and you're an A player. You felt more comfortable in it because all of you were trying to get something done. Mm. There was no ruse. There was no, you know, anything behind the scenes. It was a known game.
Well, so for instance, that, you know, Joel Osteen has this huge event coming up. They rented out Yankee Stadium for this Night of Hope. They're anticipating 50 some thousand people. And there were some people in the room that were introduced, and, you know, they were like, well, I know this person and you know this person. How can we get them to your event?
Right.
It'd be great to have the mayor there. Like, and you're watching the horse trading in this sense. And you're right. Nobody's getting their feelings hurt. No. And there were certain things where, but it was just so fascinating to watch, partly because, you know, in the sense, in the leadership structures and in the spaces I've been in, the number one thing I'm constantly thinking about is everybody else's feelings.
Yes, for sure.
And the number one thing that they were all thinking about is fruitfulness. Like, how are we providing a better world for tomorrow through this, this, and this? And not one of them really, I mean, they all were having fun, but that was secondary to...
Well, they know that's their purpose. Their job is to increase the value of other people. So the horse trading you had was, I can offer you value here and you can offer me value here. Yep. And then everybody's made better because of it. If you're playing with some A or B and C players, they have nothing to trade you, right? Mm. You can increase their value too. Let's like, you know, you can use them as traction, but let's just say you're a martyr and you want to just give, like, they would feel almost inadequate because they don't have anything of equal value. So if someone's bringing to the mayor and I'm bringing hors d'oeuvres, like, I'm going to feel inadequate, right?
Sure. Yeah. No, and it's interesting because I've been in rooms like this before, but not in the headspace that I was in for this. I haven't been in rooms like this before, but I've been in rooms where I felt inadequate is what I should say. The feeling that I had and feeling like I don't have anything to offer. And so I felt in that space like you're talking about. It's just so fascinating when you watch, to use your term, the A players get together. I was literally like, well, that's how that's done. You know, like you watch that and it's like, that's extraordinary. And you know, and you're right. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. And they're literally all about how do we get the best possible outcome? I can bring this to you. Well, you know, it's great. And I can bring this to the table. And nobody's sitting there worried about, well, where are they going to sit? And how's this like, let's just get it done. And they're executors. I had, was having some conversations and, they talked about, we were talking about hiring and firing and, someone said they had a billionaire say to them that when you hire people, don't hire people that you like, don't hire people that are family or whatever. You hire people that get crap done. Like that's why you for hire sure. people.
100%.
They didn't say crap, but right. I don't use yeah.
Wow, at a retreat.
and so in that sense, like you're hiring those people that can execute and can get stuff done. And I feel like a lot of times and maybe this is true across the board in the nonprofit world, in the church world, you know, we don't talk a lot about fruitfulness. Dr. Henry Cloud was with us, a psychologist, Christian psychologist, brilliant guy, read several of his books. And so it was really cool to get to hang and I ate a chocolate chip cookie with him at the dessert bar and chatted with him. It was really cool. But he talked, we did a Q&A session, and he talked about fruitfulness and how, you know, in the church world particularly, you know, the only way people get fired is if they sleep with the secretary or steal money. And he's like, because everybody's so nice, but some people that you have on your team are horrible at their jobs and they should be fired because they're not being fruitful.
Right.
And he talked about being good stewards, and he hit a couple of other things, and you could hear, you could hear the reinforcement of it. For me, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And he's like, he goes, you should go back to your teams and ask them, what does it take to get fired here? And see what they say. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and let them panic a little bit and let them sweat a little bit. Don't feed them anything. Just ask them that question. And you should know, you know, and if their response is, well, I just have to sleep with somebody or that I'm not supposed to, or steal money,
just like everybody else.
And you're just like everybody else.
Right.
And he goes, but he goes, they should know that I'm expected to be fruitful in this way. And if I'm not fruitful in this way, then we need to reevaluate. Maybe I'm out of position. But I certainly, you know, a change needs to be made. So it was just a totally different vantage point.
Well, remember though, like A players, when you give them a goal that has an output, like responsibility, like you have to hit this, that's a challenge to them. And it makes them feel good that they have purpose and they know what their goal is. Anybody who's not an A, then telling them that they need to come out, that's a pressure and a stress. And they're trying to avoid those pressures and trying to get by feeling good rather than being good.
Well, like, so for instance, I had, in some of my time, I had a lot of one-on-one time with Bishop Stern. So I'm getting ready to go and serve up in Buffalo. And, you know, we were talking about some of the key events and key things that he wants me to take and run with. And they do this huge Christmas event. And we talked through some of his frustrations with it. Why, you know, and I, you know, I asked the question, I said, well, what is a successful event look like? They have like a 40 piece orchestra. They do this huge musical event. And it's a big ta-da. And he started rattling off, and the whole time I'm going, for me, you know, I'm getting, all right, you want 5,000 people through the door that weekend. You want this, you want the, let's go. Like, who do I meet with next week? Like in that sense, you know, right now I have a lot of information and I'm just, you know, for me, I'm trying to sit that on a shelf and go, all right, August 7th, I'll tackle this. But, you know, I'm starting to prioritize some of those things. And I'm looking at that. And for me, I, on all those things, I hear challenge. I'm like, all right, he wants 5,000. How do I get him 10? Like my brain goes to that spot. All right. He wants a, you know, reception with local pastors and stuff like that. Well, how do we pull that off on a thing? So, you know, my wheels are turning in those regards. And I love that sort of stuff, but I totally get what you're saying. You know, sometimes we shy away from going, hey, this event would be great, or this project would be helpful if we did, you know, we want to hit this, this, and this. And when you do that, you watch the cream rise to the top. Like people, some people engage and are pumped, and that's awesome. And other people are like, what if we don't hit it? You know, we probably shouldn't set such steep goals, et cetera. Right.
Well, and in most, if you look at any leadership team, whether or not you're in nonprofit or in the corporate world, that there's no delineation between what the field is and what the sideline or what the practice field is. So it's not an all or nothing prospect. Like you get to be reassuring and goal setting and working behind people when you're on the practice field.
Yeah.
When you're on the game field, like it's not time to do your learning and your experimenting and your emotions. It's about scoring goals and getting first downs and what the objectives are. And that's how you get to have a little bit of both of us. I would say like when we're on the field, it's game plan, right? That's it. You don't do it. You're off the field and somebody else is in your spot. That's when firings happen when it comes to shut up. But when you're in the practice field, that's when you're a little bit like, hey, good. I want to run the route a little differently. Yeah, let's try that out. And then you could be a little bit more supportive.
No, yeah, I totally, you know, it's as you were saying that, I'm thinking of the movie Remember the Titans.
Yes, right.
And when, oh gosh, I'm forgetting his name. Petey was sidelined and you had, you had the white kid who took over for the black kid on the field,
okay,
and he's getting beat. It's not Ryan Gosling.
Could be.
I don't know. But he's getting just beat, and he comes over and says to the coach, like, you just got to put him in. He's better than me. I'm getting beat or whatever. And you have these moments where teams recognize and rise to those occasions. Yes. And as a coach, you don't even have to do the hiring and firing. He did that in the beginning part. They all caught on what needed to be done. He's going, hey, I'm getting
fire
beat.
Me.
This person. Right, yeah. Fire me. Cause winning is more important.
Yes.
And I love that about that style of culture is the same thing in the movie Miracle. And a couple of those movies, they really emphasize, hey, the team's on mission and on a goal. And at practice, we're going to have fun. We're going to, you know, they have the, you know, they sweat together, they play together, they laugh, they're singing in the locker room, all that. But when they step out on the field, like coach is like, you know, get off, this person's executing, you're not executing, get out of the way. And I think people get their feelings hurt too much in work and all that sort of stuff. So how do you navigate that as a, you have multiple companies that you oversee? How do you track with that? Because obviously people get their feelings hurt.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, does Joe have a self-esteem class that he does for them? Or
no, and what's dependable about my operations is that I am logos. I am the logical guy. And so it's never my responsibility to make things feel good. I sort of like ask people that are around me that, you know, to sort of take it, translate it, put it in something that's more more palatable for, mm-hmm. delicate personalities. Because sometimes it's not about like, if you can't have an operation that has all the sales dogs that are there, you're going to have some golden retrievers that they do need to be propped up to in order to go and get sales stuff. But we still have extreme definition of what a successful day, you know, looks like. And as a leader, you have to keep moving elements around until they can feel in their element when they're not stressed. Cause if you put those stresses on a golden retriever, they're not going to love you anymore. They really are not.
They will bite you.
Exactly. So I keep insulated my leadership ability, I have to have a layer around me so that I don't have direct interactions with golden retrievers.
Cause you hurt them.
I will. They will not be happy.
So for the record, on the podcast, Joe hurts puppies.
The headline. I can
you can tweet that. Title that this episode, Joe Hurts Puppies. Don't ever run for office. They'll run that clip.
That one will sneak up on me. I know it.
No, it's great. So, as I'm watching that, when you have, because you're not always going to have A players sitting at your table.
Right.
So you're going to have B and C players. You're going to have people, like you said, golden retrievers, different motivations. So you insulate yourself. Some people can't.
Right.
So if you can't be insulated and not deal with the B and C in that regard, or the golden retriever, how do you manage them? How do you lead those type of people?
You are not going to be your best. You're going to have to manipulate yourself to be what it takes to keep a team together. Mm. And you're going to be running about 30% capacity and be frustrated as hell because you're being slowed down and anchored to the moment.
Mm.
It's tough even when you get a sampling of the rung above where you are to go back to the rung below because it is terribly frustrating.
Mm.
It's better to have that, you know, never knowing that it even was there.
When you talk about getting a sampling of that. So when was Joe's sampling? Do you remember the moment where you're like, oh, wow, like I'm sitting in a room with some people that were.
I'm probably 22 years old and I was doing marketing and promotions. And marketing promotions here was doing a couple commercials here and there, putting something in the newspaper. And I started doing work in NASCAR. And so I got put in the room with all of a Richard Childress Racing's, their PR and marketing department. And we're going to talk about marketing.
Yeah.
Like, no, we're not. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. But I knew them as human beings because we would bounce press releases off of one another. But then we were talking strategy and I was just a sponge.
You brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A sponge, listened to it, asked questions. And at first I was I didn't want them to know that I was a novice. They know you're a novice. All right? You're not really chicken, right?
Yeah,
So then I warmed up to asking questions about like, what is this? And I got a kind of wind that there's a way bigger machine that I didn't even know existed, that's above their heads, and that they pay homage to the machine that's even above them. So I figured out that no matter where you're at, there's a machine that's directly above you that's way smarter than you. And I think get to God somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere there. Well, and apparently, according to Google, the machines are coming to life.
Yes, they
tech
are.
At Google, right? Or whatever. But that's so interesting. And I think that's cool. And I think our audience should recognize, you know, you're always going to have those moments. Like I can look back and I can remember, you know, Bishop Thomas inviting me into a room with other pastors and leaders. And I went, you know, all these pastors have way more people in their church than I do. They have way more financial ability than I do. And, here I am. You know, I just started pastoring Bridge of Hope. I think I was 29. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm here. And he's like, you're here because I invited you to be here. I didn't invite you here because you have anything necessarily to offer this group, but I wanted to pour in. And I was like, and I asked him, I said to Bishop Thomas, I said, you know, I said, do you ever find, because he's on John Maxwell's leadership team, and there's just a bunch of those things. And he said, if you ever lose that, you'll stop growing. You should always find yourself in a room that you don't belong at some level. And he told a story one time that John Maxwell had contacted him, was coming through, and he got to, you know, be in this green room. And he goes, here I am, this, you know, pastor from Coatesville, Ohio. And, you know, I'm sitting in a room with, you know, athletes and other people that I'm like, I don't have anything to offer this room. And, you know, you find yourself, and it's humbling to be in that space, but, you know, I think God opens those doors, and it's important for us to recognize that everybody has a room like that.
Yeah.
Because some people, and, yeah.
You know, the first thing, I think one of the first things that you and I talked about was like a lot of people that are especially been through trauma, or they have, you know, addiction recoveries, they're looking like one inch in front of themselves. Yeah. They can only factor in what's happening right immediately. And the farther you put your gaze off the horizon, like you can go 3-4 months and you're putting deals on the calendar that haven't even realized there's no structure to them, because it's your responsibility to put structure to them. So yeah. Every conversation you have is to start realizing the things that you already put on your calendar that need some backbones and some organs and whatever.
Yeah. And I think, you know, thinking about that, it's the faith element that we always talk about. So they're structuring things on their calendars and deals on the calendars without like, they don't know what it's going to look like, but they put them on there as if they're already done.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's 100%. It's the faith side of things that we always talk about.
This place was called Youngstown Studio before Youngstown Studio was a thing. That's one of those deals where, hey, how did Youngstown Studio happen? Was it going to happen and I just did that preliminarily, or did it happen because I put it out on the outside of the door? Never will know.
Both.
Yeah. Both. And all.
Yep. Well, I think, that for this weekend for me was a great lesson. And I think it was an introduction into the season that God's shifting me into. And it's just, you know, I look at it and I keep going to myself, like, did that really happen? Like this, it was such an incredible weekend, but it was like a crash course in, all right, you need to upgrade your skills in this level and this level. And I'm just going to be doing a lot of listening and learning and being in rooms where I don't belong.
What I posted last week about if you have the persistence to do something, doing it badly for long enough, you'll be a master at it. And,
that's so good.
And you just got to get really used to that feeling. And because now it feels like you're inadequate and you almost, it hurts you a little bit. It's painful. But in the future, it will be part of life. Like it feels like you're living, like an exhilaration of adding something else to your arsenal.
Yeah. It was interesting because, you know, I don't, for instance, I've flown a little bit, but mostly that's been to Israel and family vacation. like those have been the two spots. I don't fly for a meeting here. I don't do any of that sort of stuff. And when this was all being set up, the administrator that was setting everything up, they were like, do you have a preferred airline with, you know, points or whatever? And my response back was, I don't fly often enough. And then I put yet to have a preferred airline.
There you go.
Because it's one of those things that for me that I know some of this is going to be part of what God does, whether it's 5 years from now or 10 years from now. You know, I'm just this whole world that's opening up. I'm just excited to get to play a part in the kingdom in a different space. And
can I bring up one little topic? Because this is next for you. So I'm going to, this is like, do it. Like live.
Coach me, Joe. Coach me. Because literally, as I'm sitting in some of those rooms, I'm remembering things that you said, because I know you've been in spaces like this, and you think differently on this. You've stretched me on money. You've stretched me on a bunch of those things. And the whole time I'm going, this, you know, WWJD, what would Joe do? You know?
Blasphemy!
No, but, you know, in that sense, like I've gleaned a lot in that regard. So
right now is where you start considering what's called imposters, okay, syndrome. And so it happens to every person that hits this level, where you start looking at things like if you deserve or not deserve to be there. So I've talked to musicians and actors and every place of celebrity, and all of them feel the same way when they're slamming on their guitar in front of thousands of people in an audience. The whole time they're thinking of, I really don't deserve it. I'm not as good as these people think I am.
And I've literally said to Sam laying in bed, I'm like, this next season, an opportunity that we've agreed to take, I'm like, there has to be somebody better. Like I've laid in bed like, and she goes, no, honey, you're amazing. And she's very sweet about it. But it's something you totally wrestle with.
Yeah. And from the audience perspective, right, you will be greater than you have ever been before. Right. Mm. And from the stage perspective, you don't qualify for what your acknowledgements you're giving. And it never changes. So for every artist and whatever, they're all thinking and feeling the same thing. So the good artists use that to make themselves better. That is your challenge, is to try to live up to the standards that are already being granted, because you are now getting something before you deserve it, and you got to then deserve it.
And
on the other side, we're like, everybody's rushing to try to get to the point where they get acknowledgement, being better than they're getting acknowledgements for. So you flip the script.
It's good. It's so good. Well, it was an amazing experience. And when we're off air, I'll show you a few pictures and tell you a few stories that our audience won't hear. So that was a little tease there. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content.